Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Paul Tonko, when we last spoke, you mentioned immigration and that some of the people in the House on the Republican side had some things to say, which you considered, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but incendiary. What did they say?
Well, you know, it's almost a callous disregard for true immigration reform. They'll even wax with some of the harshness of ethnic slurs. And you'll also find that a lot of it is extreme thinking with, you know, criminal behavior that they place onto people. They'll label you with criminal behavior before you come up with some sort of comprehensive reform strategy that will end the illegal entry and put together some sort of effective plan that addresses the reality that there are 12 million undocumented immigrants that are currently living within our borders. And there's a way to address that. The Senate, United States Senate, has had a bipartisan team trying to put together a best plan for a path to citizenship. But, you know, here you have many employer types out there, ranging from agriculture to healthcare to engineering, that are encouraging immigration reform. And they want to see something streamlined. They want to see something happening here. And all we have is antagonism coming from the ranks of those who should be at the table helping to negotiate.
We mentioned this the last time on abortion and women. Is this smart thinking in terms of alienating huge numbers of Hispanics and Asians and others who are newer citizens and creating a bad move for them in terms of their politics? These are people who voted against them last time in large numbers.
Well, I would think that any political strategist, any pollster that would visit with the Republican caucus would remind them that they got 28% of the Hispanics last time. That's very weak support. And then for everybody to kind of understand, acknowledge that something had to be done in the heat of the election, to say, okay, well, now we're going to go and work on immigration reform, it's so short-lived. I mean, it's ridiculous, Alan. They talk about something like it's going to be a real issue, and then before they even get some firmness to the solution, before we even begin to delineate some of the elements of reform, they're out there bashing the process, coming up with extreme thinking where, you know, anyone found in the States would be guilty of some sort of, you know, trespassing crime and everything, when in fact, there are those working in a bipartisan fashion in the other house looking to put together a path, an effective path to citizenship. It's really foolish.
Let me ask you this, because I'm always suspicious of all politicians,
mm-hmm.
except for you. No. Are the Democrats gleeful that the Republicans are behaving in this sort of way in which they are challenging women on abortion, they're challenging Hispanics in terms of immigration and alienating them? Is this good for the Democrats?
Well, you know, it's hard to tell because, you know, you talk about being gleeful. I think what it is more frustrating to have to deal with it because we can't get some of these reforms done that are essential for us to move forward and build the economy and grow the opportunity for jobs. As I've said on prior shows, these folks go back to districts that absolutely reinforce this thinking. So it's not like they're at risk. And the harm they do here in the process is just divide not only their own caucus, sometimes into three parts, not two, which makes it very difficult to come to the negotiating table because there's no firmness to their offer because they're trying to wiggle through their own diversity and their extreme thinking.
In other words, they're beginning to sound like Democrats. but interestingly, you know, there are, when you take the totality of the United States and you see a presidential election and you see the Republicans losing women and the women vote and losing the Hispanic vote, which are both huge, but as you say, going back to districts that look like themselves, is that because we have drawn our districts in, you know, a partisan way? Is that what's going on?
Oh, yeah, there was an awful lot of cleverness that they used on redistricting, and they locked in a number of seats that make it very difficult to return those seats to the Democratic column. However, there is this universe, I would think, of more marginal situations that when you bring about these dynamics of which you spoke, the women issues, the immigration reform, some of the efforts to address student loans, you start turning off these audiences, and I think you're creating an intensity out there with some of these groups where they will show up in much larger numbers because they're tired of the thinking. I mean, you know, over and over, it seems like when, who was it, Congressman Aiken made a comment last year in the Missouri race about a woman's body and how it responds to rape, you know, you would have thought they would run for cover and say, okay, let's not ever say that again. Then you have people coming out reinforcing that thinking. Very strange dynamic right now.
Well, tell me about something. I mean, in a presidential election, you get a huge turnout.
Yes.
In congressional elections, you get fewer people coming out. And what you've just said hinted at your thinking that some people who are non-traditional voters, in other words, young people, for example, who don't vote in large numbers in a congressional election because of the way in which they're being treated on student loans, might come out. Is that what you're saying?
You know, just the harshness that I think it was Representative King the other day released a statement about immigration reform advocates that had come to his office and, you know, labeled them as some sort of unrealistic, very demanding type of crowd that invaded his office. I mean, these are, you know, this is the capital of the nation here. No one's invading your office. They have rights to access to our office. This is, you know, the representative form of government. No one's invading your office, but it's the dismissiveness with which the people with whom they don't agree are responded to that is really troubling.
We only have 2 minutes, Paul Tonko. I could talk about these other issues for a long time, but the National Security Agency has been under tremendous criticism for monitoring phone calls and emails and communication. The administration is now fighting back and giving specific instances in which lives have been saved as a result of this. So now we have sort of a civil liberty versus security paradigm shaping up. What do you make of it? And we only have a minute and a half.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we have to be very careful to balance the measures we use to enhance security of our nation while protecting the freedoms that are hallmark to this country. And that's a tender balance. And we need to make sure that all the facts come out in the case before we pass judgment. It's clear that there's over 1 million Americans that possess security clearances. And in the case of Edward Snowden, you know, there's a responsibility.
He's the leaker for those people who may not remember. Yeah.
And there's a responsibility that comes with that high-level access to sensitive information. But, you know, you look at the decades worth now, from President Bush down to President Obama, and it seems as though the issues, the balance has erred in favor of protecting freedoms and getting to what might be terrorist forces. And if anyone's going to leak any information here, you need a warrant. You know, I think some of this stuff was overextended in terms of what happens and just very loosely defined rather than really knowing the process. But, you know, I voted against the Patriot Act because of concern like this. But I do think that the implementation here has been to move forward with as careful an effort to balance the situation.
Paul Tonko, always great to talk to you. We are so pleased and so honored that you spend all this time with us. I thank you so much. And when we come back the very next time, I have a host of other things to talk to you about.
Good. Always a pleasure, Alan.